You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Mark Feinsand, executive reporter for MLB.com. Welcome to the Executive Access Podcast. Before we get to this week's episode, a word from our sponsor. Erectile dysfunction is more common than you might think. 52% of men over 40 will experience ED at some point, and about 75% of those men don't seek treatment. That's why Roman makes it easy to get expert treatment from a U.S.-licensed physician all online. No judgment, no hassle, no hours spent in the waiting room. With Roman, you get expert medical care for ED right in the comfort and privacy of your own home. Everything is online, so it's convenient and discreet to contact a doctor about prescription medication. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/major and complete an online visit with your medical history and symptoms. A licensed physician will evaluate your online visit and let you know within 24 hours if medication is right for you. If prescribed by the doctor, Roman delivers genuine medication right to your door with free two-day shipping. Just go to GetRoman.com/major to get a free online visit and free two-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/major to get started with a free online visit. That's GetRoman.com/major. Josh Boyd broke into the baseball world as a writer, making a name for himself during a four-year stint covering prospects and the draft for Baseball America. But just when it seemed he was on track to be the host of a podcast like this rather than the guest, he gave up writing to become an area scout for the San Diego Padres, taking his first step towards a big league front office career. Boyd joined the Texas Rangers in 2008 as assistant director of pro scouting, earning a promotion to director the following year. He remained in that role for 5 years before becoming the club's senior director of player personnel. In November of 2016, he was named assistant general manager, continuing as one of John Daniels' top lieutenants. I sat down with Boyd to discuss his transition from one side of the business to the other, the art of scouting, what he's learned from Daniels, Thad Levine, and AJ Preller, all of whom he worked with in Texas, and his memories from the Rangers' 2 trips to the World Series. Enjoy this conversation with Rangers assistant GM, Josh Boyd. Josh, you grew up in Washington State, moved to Irvine, California when you were in high school. Were you always a big baseball fan? Who are you, California, Washington, who are your favorite teams?
Of course, the Yankees, you know, because I was on the West Coast. Well, my parents are from Jersey, and my grandpa was just a huge Yankee fan. So anytime I looked up to him, he was my idol. And so, you know, get all the stories about when he was growing up and Mantle and everything. It was, I love the Yankees, and being on the West Coast, we'd travel back to New York and to Jersey for summers, and it was, you know, going to first game in Yankee Stadium. Those kind of memories you can't replace. They're pretty special.
Was baseball always your favorite sport?
Yeah.
That your first jobs in baseball were as a writer, which, you know, obviously we can relate to on this end of it. You worked for Stats, Inc. starting in 1996. You did some work for MLB.com in 1999, so we missed each other by just a couple of years. Was a writing career kind of your long-term plan at that point?
Yeah, it really was. It was, you know, early on when kind of realized that playing is not an option, and I loved writing. And, you know, like I said, my grandpa was a writer, and I just loved writing. I would write about, I'd watch games on TV and I'd write about it. I'd read, I was constantly writing, and I still do all the time, which is, you know, so really my goal was to become a writer. And honestly, once I realized there was such a thing as Baseball America that just covered prospects, all I wanted to do was write for Baseball America. That was kind of my single, really, that was the path. I was going to do that. And, you know, I was fortunate enough, I think, when some point along the way there was a dial-up internet, and I was able to log on and start finding, you know, different things, MLB.com. Or I think I remember the first time, you know, I can still picture the ESPN Sports Zone page trying to load. And I found, you know, Rob Neyer was writing there at the time, and I would just go and I'd start emailing anybody. And so John Sickles was writing the stats version of the prospect book they had at the time, and so I'm trying to find, all right, Rob Neyer, stats here, ESPN, how do I get in touch with John Sickles? I need to know anybody and everybody who was writing about prospects, that's what I wanted to know. I would send letters to Peter Gammons and to Baseball America and never really hear back, but I think that's where the access to email and the internet opened up really a whole world for me. So Stats Inc. had on the old 56K or something like that, they had on AOL, they had a keyword stats that they had. I mean, it was loaded with information. It was basically all their books with stats, but then they also had, you know, a couple of those books that they used to do with, you know, just those essays, and they were fascinating. And then Mike Middleman, who worked for Stats at the time, and his son Ryan is actually a pro scouting director for the Blue Jays now. Mike, same thing. I just start emailing people and, hey, I'll write for you and write for free. And he gave me an opportunity on that Stats AOL site, just start writing about prospects. So I would do anything and everything to you know, learn about all these guys that they're playing the minors, and, you know, probably copied the style of Baseball America and John Sickles and Peter Gammons, those old Sunday diamond notes and everything, and just kind of you know, see what I could do with it. But that was my passion, really, is, you know, kind of the two things coming together, love for baseball and, you know, and really enjoyed writing.
Where did the interest in prospects and minor leaguers come from? Because back at this time, late 90s, like you said, there wasn't a whole lot out there. You didn't have the sites that are now dedicated to it. You didn't have, really, fans didn't know quite that much about their team's prospects unless they were reading Baseball America or really digging into, you know, the bottom of notebooks. You know, the writers were writing, but even then, it just didn't seem like there was that much out there. What sort of spurred your interest in that area of the game?
Yeah, if you go way back, I think it probably had something to do with, you know, baseball cards and rookie cards and wanting to always get that card and know who it was before everybody else, you know. And so it would be that. It would be those, you know, the Street and Smiths or Sporting News annuals, and just going straight to the back to the prospects and just trying to learn about who this next wave was. And I think that was just something that always really intrigued me, was trying to know something about those guys before everybody else did. So, you know, like I said, then Baseball America was like, whoa, this is amazing. Like, who's been hiding this from me for my whole life? At the point I discovered it was just, you know, it was jam-packed. And like you said, at the time, you know, you'd get maybe an annual from some of those magazines, and you know, Gammons would write little nuggets here and there in the Sunday column, but you couldn't find it everywhere or almost anywhere. So that's part of the intrigue, was really just trying to understand who these guys were and where they came from.
2001, 2004, you're covering minor league prospects in the draft as a national writer for Baseball America. What was your favorite part of that job?
Oh man, it was baseball all the time. I think, you know, as I look back, I remember one of the first days, just realizing I had the Baseball America directory there. Start flipping through it and go, I can call these people now, and, you know, pick a story I wanted to do. I remember the handful of very first people I called, probably in the first week, that were incredibly just gracious with their time. You know, some guy that, again, at the time, probably not many people were calling these guys asking about prospects, but Allard Baird was the GM of the Royals. I may have called to talk about Colt Griffin or somebody like that. You know, Jason McLeod was with the Padres, and I would just go through the book and go, oh, this looks like a good name to ask for. He was assistant in player development, like, probably knows a lot. And we'd talk about Jake Peavy and Dennis Tankersley, and, you know, and then I think later in that year I went to scout school for Baseball America to do an article, and Jason was there, and we've been real close friends ever since. So I think in a lot of ways it's the, you know, the experience to be there, to get an opportunity to really write about baseball, talk about baseball, learn, you know, and kind of develop my craft as a writer. You know, John Manuel, some of those guys that really invested in me, and I think I was pretty raw as a writer, just kind of figuring a lot of stuff out on my own and learning from others. So those relationships are extremely meaningful to me when I look back, and the opportunities that they gave me, And then being there in Durham, North Carolina, you could go to anywhere from across the street to see the Durham Bulls and AAA to, you know, the Appy League and basically every level in between. So I would go through the, you know, the daily matchups, and just you could just pick within an hour and a half or two of Durham, you could see top, you know, 100 prospects every night. So those are the kind of things that when I really reflect on it, it was a really exciting time in my life to be able to contribute to that level, and then also understand kind of the accountability of what it means to write, report, and put your name on it.
My sources tell me Alex Anthopoulos was also at your scout school that year.
He was.
What was that experience like? I mean, obviously you were going there to do a story, but what was it like to actually go through that experience?
Oh, it was incredible from a sense of, like, I felt, you know, I think that was my first year, 2001, at Baseball America, and I figured if I'm going to talk to scouts, talk to GMs, talk to people in player development on a regular basis, I want to at least try to see the game through their eyes. What are we looking at? And if, you know, I really felt that would be a unique way to present, you know, my perspective or a perspective through their lens on the players and the prospects. So, you know, learn about the 20 to 80 scale and kind of go through that whole process with you know, the scouting bureau and the, you know, guys like Jason and Alex there, Brian Barber, who ended up, when I did start scouting, Brian, you know, former first rounder with the Cardinals, was an area scout that probably helped me get through my first year. And again, it's those relationships that stand out so much, that the guys who really help you along the way. But you know, back to scout school, it was, you know, 2 weeks of immersion in this new world, that seeing the game through a different lens. And again, my intent was fully just to really help me as a writer, and, you know, trying to bring a different angle of expertise to the readers of the magazine. And, you know, it ended up leading to something else down the road. But
so your goal at that point was to be a writer, yeah, writing for Baseball America, prospects, this is the dream job. How does that, in 2004, turn into you becoming an area scout for the Padres?
It really was 100%. It was Baseball America all the way, and you meet a ton of people along the way who, you know, one being Chief Gayton, who was the scouting director of the Padres at the time. And I think, you know, we talk, I'd call them, do their top 10, top 30 lists, and all that, and, you know, we kind of develop a relationship, and then we'd see each other in person at games, and same thing. And he told me he was interviewing me the whole time, in a way, which is probably what scouts do, constantly constantly evaluating. So we're sitting there, I think we were just finishing up the 2004 prospect handbook in the office in Durham, and I get an email, it comes across, and I think it was in January, and you know, it's an email from Chief, and all it says is, what do you think about scouting? I'm like, well, I think scouting's really cool, and I respect what you guys do. And I'm like, I don't know. He's asking me about a job. So I send the email back, you know, just basically complimenting scouts and telling him what I think about scouting. And he calls immediately, and he's laughing hysterically on the other line. He's like, no. He's like, we have a job open in the Mid-Atlantic. And he goes, I want to see what you think about it. And I'm just, you know, maybe this is me being naive. I was blindsided by the fact that, like, he viewed me to be a candidate for that job. So, you know, ended up taking it. First year there up in the Mid-Atlantic, lived in Richmond, and then moved out west to Seattle area for 3 years out in the Northwest.
You had been through scout school to that point, but did you take to scouting right away when you did it, or was there a learning process and a bit of a learning curve?
I think scouting is just constant learning process. So I think I always had, like, that curiosity for scouting, evaluating, projecting. You know, again, maybe it goes back to, like, those early days of trying to identify things that before everybody else did, whether it was to get a rookie card or whatever that excitement, you know, originally was. But it's still a challenge. I think it's really challenging, you know, depending on the age group you're scouting, from Dominican, Latin America to, you know, all throughout the minor leagues and for the draft, there's so many lessons along the way that I don't think that process ever really stops. I think the scout school gave a really good foundation of kind of understanding, you know, obviously the scale, but really developing where does your scale come from? If you've never seen a 50 curveball before, how are you going to know that that's not a 70 or a 20?
Is there a specific skill set that makes for a better scout?
Yeah, there's definitely a specific skill set, and you can learn, you know. So, you know, I think as you know, I've been fortunate enough here to be able to be in position to help hire our staff, help develop, you know, some of the guys along the way. You know, I think the things that as a reporter you do, gathering information, checking sources, those are some fundamental pieces of it before you even get to the field. You know, the organization of it, the ability to relay what you saw. Like I said, in a lot of ways, what I was doing at Baseball America was a very similar foundation to what it was ended up being with the Padres and since. And, you know, I think the instincts are going to vary from, you know, guys who are maybe been in the game forever or just have that natural intuition for seeing that special thing in a player. But I think we take a lot of pride here and trying to help to understand what we're looking at, why we're looking at it, what we're looking for, what fits the Rangers, you know, and what do we learn from past lessons, good and bad, and other teams and our own mistakes. I guess all that being said, I think, you know, the skill set boils down to like being really attentive to details, also with that huge database of your players and the background that you've scouted.
You joined the Rangers in 2008 as assistant director of pro scouting, got promoted to director of pro scouting the next year. You held that role for 5 years. What were the biggest differences for you going from amateur scouting to pro scouting?
Yeah, I felt really fortunate to be able to do an area and just be out on the road, because as an area guy, you know, you're on your own. You're managing your area, you're managing your territory, you're reporting to get people to see your players, but you're responsible for the information that's coming in on that list. So that foundation of just being thorough was really good to come into the office, and now, you know, now it's 30 teams you're responsible for, knowing their prospects top to bottom. You know, in a lot of ways, I had existing relationship with JD and AJ, and then got to know Thad, obviously, working here, but I was pretty close with AJ and JD before coming here. So they really helped develop me. They gave me a lot of opportunities that I probably wasn't ready for at the time, but learned on the job with their guidance, and then all of us just kind of going through a lot of things together at the same time. I think the communication with the scouts and maybe part of it is the, you know, being in their shoes, being out on the road and understanding those sacrifices that our staff makes to do this job and how much goes into it. I think the communication was probably one of the most important things and probably the biggest difference, as opposed to as an area guy being out, you know, again, just responsible for my list and reporting up to a cross-checker director, where this was really helping direct an entire staff to, you know, just I want to know what they're seeing. I want to try to help, you know, point them in the right direction when needed. But you know, again, I was still in the process of learning from a veteran, experienced staff that we had here when I got here.
You mentioned that you already had relationships with John Daniels and AJ Preller. Was that just from being a writer and talking to them a lot, or where did you first sort of get to know them?
That was through us. I met AJ through a mutual friend, and we all met at the winter meetings when I think all three of us and Mike Daly were all there just trying to get jobs, and they were trying to become GMs and, you know, within the next 10 years, which they pretty much did. And I was trying to chase Peter Gammons down and find out where Jim Callis was. So it was one of those things that I think that time spent in the lobby waiting and just talking baseball with each other at such a similar point in our life and trying to get to a goal and a dream that we really connected. So, you know, from that, it may have been, I think, the 99 or 2000 winter meetings, somewhere in that range in Anaheim. And then, you know, the next couple of years after that, you know, they ended up going their different ways with internships and things like that. And so we all stayed in pretty close contact as things progressed.
After your director of pro scouting job, your next move was the senior director of player personnel. What was your favorite part of that job?
Yeah, I think that was at the point where when AJ moved on to the Padres. So, you know, the responsibility, as closely as AJ and I worked together, learned a ton from him on how thorough we knew players as an organization. So the challenge there just being to continue that those high expectations, you know, and be able to really be out in front of whatever that information was that needed to be filtered ultimately to JD for making decisions. I think the expanded part of responsibility there was just a little more connected to the major league team and some of those decisions. But again, like the close relationships and JD and Thad really investing in me and in those times was key.
2 years after you came to Texas, the Rangers made their first of two straight World Series appearances. They'd never been there before. What do you remember most about those runs? Do you have any favorite story or two from those 2 years?
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously absolutely incredible. Just part of a dream. But I think to see all of us and organizationally, like what had been started before I was here, when I think 2007, the Mark Teixeira trade and Elvis and Neftali, to see all these pieces come together, to see the energy that Ron Washington and that staff had on a nightly basis was pretty special way to like break into a front office. I think some of those experiences throughout the playoff runs you never forget. You know, we get to the end of both of them. You know, obviously in St. Louis, you know, just talk about memories or nightmares or whatever. but either way, the moments within those games that. You know, there was a 2010 Cliff Lee, couple of the moments where we were all just in awe of him. And, you know, so you'd go down after a win, Tampa and in New York, and just to see him after he'd carved and he didn't look like he'd broken a sweat. And he's just like, wow, that was fun, huh? And, you know, you just see this to see that side of it, see a little more intimately, to understand really those stories of how many people, whether it was a trade like Cliff Lee that, you know, we had our scouts sat on them for, you know, 2 months leading up to that, and, you know, the Blake Bevins and the players we traded in it, and knowing all the different stories and development that went into each of those guys to culminate in those deals. I think that's still how I watch the game now, is when I look out and, you know, see Guzman and Odor and Mazzara, and you think of them when we scouted them at 15 and how many players have come along or how many people were involved and getting them to this point. That's part of the way I view the game is through those stories. And
you've mentioned all three of these guys to this point. Don Daniels, Thad Levine, AJ Preller, you were in a front office with all of them. They're all, you know, running or co-running teams at this point. Is there one thing that you learned from each of them that you've tried to incorporate into your own repertoire as an executive?
Yeah, definitely. I'd say like the point we're at now, and JD and Thad in particular, I think a huge stamp on this organization is how we treat people, and the fact that it's, you know, we're competitive and the whole organization competitive by nature, but. That the way that, again, going back to the sacrifice that everybody in this building makes to get a winner out on that field, and that we're doing it together, and that we can be friends while we're doing it, we can really enjoy the special moments and the challenging moments with each other. I would say that, you know, Thad may be one of the best in the game in terms of having time for people to listen to the things that. As he described them, they may not be the bullet points on your job description, but they may be more important than anything else that's on there. So I think being in an organization that values those things is something that I feel really, really fortunate to be able to do. I think we have a great culture in that sense, that we guys really enjoy working together, learning together, and trying to compete to bring a World Series to Texas. With AJ, it was purely about just baseball 24/7, a player evaluation, and again, in a competitive sense of knowing probably the thoroughness of really knowing players inside and out, and it was challenging. You knew you're gonna have an opinion. You're gonna get asked your opinion. We were gonna talk about it over and over again at any time of the day and evening, and so being prepared, being thorough, and then just looking for those competitive advantages that maybe we value more than anybody else.
November of 2016, after Thad left to go to the Twins, you were promoted to assistant general manager. According to your bio, written, I assume, by the great John Blake, you advised John Daniels on all professional acquisitions and trades, help establish the team's scouting and personnel philosophies, evaluate talent domestically at the major, minor, and amateur levels, as well as professional baseball around the globe. Last time I checked, there's only 24 hours in a day. How do you possibly juggle that many responsibilities in one job?
I think the contributions in each of those areas, but you know, again, I go back to probably one of the more fulfilling parts of all those things that fall under any of these jobs is being able to include people, develop people, and just work with people who, you know, who really we do all that stuff together. You know, nobody's I don't think anybody has enough time to do a lot of the things that we all do, but when you do them together as a staff, so yeah, all over the globe is I think it was, you know, probably really referring to the Pac Rim is an area that I've been heavily involved in, and then you know whether it's Mike Daly, Ross Fenstermaker, obviously AJ through the years, like the Latin America part of the globe is I'll pop down there and get involved, but that, you know, that's been an area of their expertise and insight.
You mentioned the Pacific Rim. You oversee the scouting operations over there. Among the guys you helped play a role in bringing over here, Colby Lewis, Tony Barnett, Chris Martin. Why do you think players like them, most recently Miles Michaelis with the Cardinals, you had him in Texas before he went to Japan. Why do you think guys really seem to thrive coming back to the majors after playing in Japan?
So I think with those guys, you know, I think Colby, Tony Barnett, and Chris Martin's in the second year now, Miles Michaelis coming off a great, you know, sort of bounce back year. I think they are really good examples of guys who went over there at a point in their career where, you know, Tony hadn't pitched in the big leagues and he'd been, you know, 2 or 3 years in AAA, really successful throughout his amateur career, pro career, but was always just short, didn't get an opportunity. Colby was obviously first round pick and big stuff, got to the big leagues quick, and then started bouncing around. Now he's on waivers and he's, you know, whatever. He went Oakland to Detroit to, he's a reliever, he's a starter, he's AAA, he's all these things. And so I think one, there's a ton of talent, but they're the guys that are at a point in their career where they're going there and they have opportunity. And one of the parts of I believe for these guys is key is, okay, there's opportunity, but there's also you're in a new culture. It's not MLB. It's not the game you grew up playing. So the guys who respect that and adapt to it, I think, are the guys who their opportunity continues. You know, Tony ended up pitching 5 or 6 years there and ended up becoming a closer. And Colby was almost lights out from day one. But I think there's a realization that this is the opportunity now. If you don't perform, you're going to the minors in Japan, which is not where you want to be. And it's not the easiest spot to really do probably anything close to the routine that you've been used to throughout your career. So I think it's that perspective, but I think the guys who adapt to the culture and accept that maybe they don't do everything exactly the way Japanese players do, but they do have to adapt. You know, it can't be just, you can't go there and change the game. So again, it's a little bit of maybe the survival in that opportunity. But I think there's also the vulnerability to go there and adapt and understand, like, this is their territory, and it's a lot easier if you, you know, Tony and his wife, Hillary, like learn Japanese and become a part of the community.
What are the biggest challenges of scouting players in international leagues where the level of competition is a tick, or in some cases, well below a tick, below what you're hoping to see them do in the majors?
Yeah, the game is so different. The ball is different. The mound is different. The style of hitting in Japan is very different. You know, I think Colby especially has probably opened a lot of eyes, and you know, Michaelis really again last year was able to come over, have success. So when they left, they were minor league free agent level guys, right? So I think going there and establishing themselves to the point where, regardless of the competition level, whether you want to say it's wherever it falls on Major League to AAA or anywhere in between, is that if you look and you go, Colby's throwing strikes, he's throwing 90, 94, I think, at the time. It's a good slider, plus slider. His delivery's better. You know, like, do those things add up to, you know, playing? If it was just the exact same guy as when he left, I think those are the guys that you probably evaluate and say, oh, he's the same level guy. Miles Michaelis goes over there and he really, really learned to pitch. You know, I think he started to make some breakthrough towards the end with us and AAA, and then that last month or so in the big leagues. But again, he goes over there, he's in the rotation with the Giants, and just strikes play anywhere, plus curveball plays anywhere. Velocity and good command plays anywhere. So I think it's just giving them the respect that they've made an adjustment, that you don't just go, that's the same guy we saw 3 years ago that we didn't like enough to guarantee anything. So those guys, they've opened doors and minds, I think, for a lot of opportunities.
What was the experience of the Yu Darvish bidding process like for you?
It was fun. It was I think with situations like that, and you know, even the Ohtani pursuit it's probably the closest thing to maybe a little bit of a college recruiting style. Darvish was the different part there is the blind bid, which
right.
was wild in a sense of not really knowing what you're shooting for and having Dice K as like that marker, but you know, you still don't know.
It might have been several years earlier too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I don't remember if there was any major. There was some major posts in between there that weren't in that range. But anyway, I think that, you know, the focus for us was really on. You knew it was going to be a huge. However, the sum added up in post and salary, you knew it was going to be a huge investment. So, I think it was about. Really putting together a track record, a history, a book on everything we could find out about Yu Darvish. So, you know, we saw 90% of his starts, probably the two seasons before. You know, we'd had history. Jim Colburn was here at the time. He and I think AJ had seen him back in high school. It was trying to do everything we could to know as much as we possibly could about Yu Darvish without being able to be in front of him until the time was appropriate. So we go back to like relationships and connections, and you know, the Nippon Ham Fighters are just a great organization. Guys that, you know, probably from that point forward, from signing Darvish, that we've developed really good working relationship with, and then, you know, his parents that we got to know throughout the year, and then even since after we signed him, you know, that was a big part of it for us. And again, I understand it comes down to like top dollar was what got him, but we wanted to know as much as we could about him, and then we also wanted, if we were the place that he was going to sign, we wanted him, his family, anybody who was important to him to know that you are coming to a place that we're going to try to do everything we can to put you in position to succeed.
And that's what made the Ohtani thing so different, is it wasn't about top dollar.
Right.
That was probably more of the college recruiting type of a visit, right?
It was probably one of the more unique situations in you know, outside of maybe, you know, Latin America free agent scouting down there. But yeah, it was he's special talent and kind of took that same approach with, if he is to choose to come here, it's going to be in part because he knows that top to bottom, this is an organization that understands who he is, has a really good feel and respect for Japanese culture, and that whether it's Darvish, you know, the pursuit and hope for Otani or the next guy is like, I think that's such a big part of it. You can't overlook. It's not just the talent. Him, like Darvish and his family, are going to move here and they're going to be in a new culture, and how can we help them adapt? Because that's, like I said, it plays a huge, huge role in the whole thing.
You also oversee the Rangers analytics department because, you know, you didn't have enough going on. There was a time when analytics were being utilized at different levels by various organizations. Now every team has a pretty deep analytics department. How can front offices differentiate themselves in that landscape?
It's been, the whole R&D analytics, everything's been really this, even though back to Moneyball 16 years ago, you know, so from that point forward, I think we've seen, well, I was at Baseball America at the time when Moneyball came out, and I guarantee you, I'd be scared to read some of the stuff I wrote at the time because I was cemented in with the scout side of the scout versus
right.
stat debate, and you know how can this happen? But it was such a us versus them time in the game, and it was, you know, to get to your question, I think as you look what's happened now and what we try to do is not just the cliche of a blend, but really for both sides to like kind of have a understanding of the subjective and objective, the art and the science of what we're doing, to be able to raise the bar for both, right? Can we include a little bit of the art and the science together to find that competitive advantage? So it's been, you know, we've added a pretty big number of analysts and developers here in the last really in the off season and kind of dating back to last year, but they're, you know, spring training is such a great time where the inclusion of everybody in this building, you know, and it really, you know, from our major league staff with Woody, with Julio Rangel as our pitching coach, with Louis Ortiz hitting, they want the information. So I think the fact that the analysts that are in position to really understand what the goal is of a major league staff in this case, or what, you know, what JD wants, or how we want information to challenge us and drive us, and then also to just to be in that position to constantly seek opportunity, but it's through connection, it's not isolation, you know, it's not just hey go, you know, deep dive and we'll see you when you come out.
Right.
It's you're in our pro scouting meetings. You know, you're in meetings with the major league coaches. The players are more fluent in all this now. And so putting them in position to really help present to implement with some clarity is such a key to the whole process.
In 2010, you said that as important as statistical analysis is, you rely on your scouting staff first and foremost. We're nearly a decade later now. Given all the advancements in analytics, is that still the case, or has it balanced out a little bit?
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, a lot of our recent trades have still been driven by scouting-based decisions. You know, you look at the Keone Kella trade last summer, you know, there's a balance that, I don't know how to define it on, you know, necessarily, but, you know, Shirton Apostle is a key player, is a player to be named in that deal, and you know, and the background on him from an amateur to the work that our scouts did going in to see him in the Appy League drove that deal significantly. You know, of course, our analysts are also, you know, checking to see are we on even close on the same page. If it's not, we're gonna have more discussions. I think to answer your question, I think it's not the same as 2010. Is it? It creates a different type of discussion, different type of follow-up for what do both sides mean. Subjectively, we see this. Objectively, with the data, we see this. How much data do we have to really understand Shirton Apostle in the Appy League at that point? You know, those things all factor into How much do we weigh each? How much do we factor each? But again, I think our scouts are continue to be a significant, meaningful part of that puzzle.
You're living proof that goals in life change. All you wanted to do was write prospects for Baseball America. Your career is taking quite a turn. As you sit here, 2019, is becoming a GM a major goal for you in this career?
It's not a major goal. It's not. I think part of, you know, you said that path of change from, you know, before Baseball America and finding freelance opportunities and having that goal. At that point, there was a goal, and maybe even there was a goal without necessarily a clear path on how to get to Baseball America. I just knew I wanted to do it, and I think part of that path and the opportunities that were within there was just open-mindedness to learn along the way. Knowing I had to figure out how to get there, and I think that allowed me to like really appreciate each of those moments, the experiences, the relationships along the way, the mentors. And as I became an area scout, I think I took the same. Once I was an area scout, I just wanted to be the best area scout. I scouted for 4 years for 4 drafts, and I wasn't even close to the best area scout. So it was the same. I want to do this. Like, I didn't think I was going to work in a front office. I didn't think I was going to, you know, become assistant GM. So I think for me, I truly just try to appreciate and respect and learn what I'm doing while I'm doing it. And it's been, I'm extremely grateful for the opportunities. And I feel like that whatever happens next, it just happens. But I think it's about really, really kind of diving into what you're doing now and trying to be the best at it.
Josh Boyd, Texas Rangers Assistant General Manager. Thanks a lot for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Mark. It's been fun. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Many thanks to Josh Boyd for taking the time to sit down for this week's episode of Executive Access. Coming up in future episodes this season, I'll sit down with Royals Assistant GM Scott Sharp, Brewers Farm Director Tom Flanagan, and other executives around the league. You can search for Executive Access on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Art19, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. So be sure to subscribe and enjoy these conversations all season long. If you like what you hear, leave us a review while you're at it. We always appreciate those. And be sure to spread the word and tell all the baseball fans in your life about Executive Access. Until next time, I'm Mark Feinsand.